From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Wakaramatsu.
Can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. I am Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, it is late in the evening on Tuesday, May 19th, 2009.
And all the music's creeping through or whatever it is.
We blew that room away. More on that later.
This is show 040, 40th show. A milestone of sorts,
if
you measure your miles in 40 podcasts.
Do we have to get t-shirts now that say over the hill with an ironic image on it?
They have already been made, my friend. How are you, Storm?
I'm all right. Coming off that great, awesome trip, which we'll talk about in a little bit. A little
tired.
Such a
week we had.
Oh,
anyway,
man.
Let's take care of the business that what is needed.
Okay, now we have 161 minions in the Paul and Storm.
Technically, we should have 162, but I've neglected to upload our latest minion, unless you did it when I wasn't looking.
Not yet. Today was the big lazy day.
By the time you hear this podcast, there will be 162 minions.
Right. All new minions will be joining the Disciples of Lore. Whedon Watch, no additional progress. Well, no, I'm going to say we're on 3.6 on the Richter scale on that. just by association.
Sure.
McCartney Watch, still 0.2. Yankovic Watch, completed. Succeeded.
Yeah, we just invented Yankovic Watch and completed it. But we get ahead of ourselves.
Right. Oh, Poochie Corner, in which we discuss people discussing us. I'm going with the Lefsitz letter.
Yeah, but again, let us do that one in order.
Yeah,
I
just
think
kind of a
chronology is key
it
to
is.
This tale.
Well, this is, you know, a special episode where everything's foreshadowed, you know.
Yeah, the whole first half of the episode, if not more of it, is pretty much going to be Poochie Corner, I think.
Yeah, possibly all of it. We're also going to be trying an experiment. We have twittered. We didn't tweet. We twittered that we're looking for things to talk about, and many of you have replied, but more on that later too.
Yes. So let us spin the Wayback Machine.
Yeah,
this
fresh.
Past week we were on tour with Jonathan Colton, as is our wont to do. We started off last Wednesday in Dallas, which was a lovely show. Good people, good crowd, good venue, and we got to have dinner at Trader Vic's.
Oh, okay, that was one of my subjects there.
Oh, okay. Let us take a brief detour from the subject of ourselves into the subject of that what you wanted to get into.
Oh, sure. It may not take long. The title of this topic, by the way, was His Hair Was Perfect. Which, if you are following along in your scorecards, is a reference to the Warren Zevon song.
Yes.
As he saw a werewolf drinking a pina colada in Trader Vic's. Okay, anyway.
I'm not helping on this one at all.
What? No, you're being a real dick.
I am. I don't know. I'm feeling dickish tonight. Sorry.
You're
forced to talk
away
with me, and many people get to listen to it. Oh, joy. Anyway, as you
fine.
Were.
If I have to lift you into my little rucksack and drag you kicking and screaming through Trader Vic's, that's fine.
You mean like the Danish Santa or whatever?
Oh, yeah, the mean one with the switch.
Yeah, the one that beats you and abducts you and takes you to another country.
See, I never knew until later what a switch was, you know.
Ah, what did you think a switch was, or did you know, or was it just an amorphous thing?
Well, I think it was just like a thing of fear, but the only thing I knew that was any type of weapon that was a switch when I was a kid was a switchblade.
Ah.
So I pictured you being, like, flayed alive by this jolly, jolly man. Anyway, Trader Vic's. We did have dinner at Trader Vic's with Jonathan, and which is kind of the thing to do if there's one around.
Right.
It's very much a step into this whole new world. Like the restaurant itself was in a nondescript high rise in a nondescript section of Dallas.
Yeah, it was connected to a hotel somewhere, but it was not exactly.
It was not exactly
like a P.F. Chang's with huge stone or fake stone horses out front or anything like that.
Right, except for the sign that said Trader Vic's. You wouldn't know that when you step in, suddenly you're immersed in this very polished wooden tiki Polynesian world, which is thoroughly invented.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of it. It always interests me when you go there, and it's just phenomenally fun, and the food's actually quite good. But how manufactured this is, and I don't know, having never been to Polynesia, if it really is a fair representation or not. But it seems odd. I guess Trader Vic's has been around since what, the '60s, and
something like that. Yeah,
and sure, like, theme restaurants have come and gone, but why the tiki thing? And there was a whole period of time when it was tiki this, tiki that,
right?
And I don't know, was it because it appeared in James Bond, or was it like an expression of
if I'm not mistaken,
society?
Hawaii had become a state not that long previous to the arising of Trader Vic's, and I'm sure that lent to a degree of fascination with the Polynesian culture specifically and Southeast Asian culture in general.
And I could see that. And it was like a loosen up type of culture, or at least that's how it's perceived.
Yeah.
You know, at a time when, let's face it, pretty repressed. So,
yeah, America was pretty buttoned down.
Yeah. So it's like, you know,
notwithstanding.
So you go to Trader Vic's and suddenly it's, the tiki gods say I have to sleep with your wife, you know. It just gave you license.
It's not me. It's King Kamehameha throwing this tea party.
Exactly. That's why my wang is hanging out. I swear, you know, we would all be dead right now if I hadn't done that.
That's right.
And then sort of a synchronicity thing, jumping ahead in your timeline, I'm afraid.
Uh-oh.
We were at Jesse Thorne's of The Sound of Young America and Jordan Jesse Oh, as Jonathan was being interviewed, and he had a coffee table book about pre-Castro Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me that these things were very similar. Like, there certainly was a Cuba with nightclubs and hotels and, you know, they built this whole mythology as a way to kind of represent this playground that rich Americans or people that just want some booze can go to. So that just got me thinking, you know, what are some either current existing mythologies that exist now that could become theme restaurants or places or kind of romanticized? And then what are some of the least likely, the most unlikely things to
be? You
mean
like Viking hut?
Well, that could be. I was thinking actually more like, you know, Hollywood, the Hollywood thing.
Oh, I gotcha.
Been captured by Planet Hollywood and sort of made into that.
Right, right.
Las Vegas or the Wild West, although that's not current.
Yeah.
Even like Iowa, you know, there's sort of this image of this wholesome, corn-fed, I don't know, James T. Kirk. Okay, that's not maybe wholesome per se, but there's a mythology there.
Mm-hmm.
And then unlikely things, like how can you make it would be a challenge to like build some kind of awesome Trader Vic like mythology out of like Wyoming
or Baltimore,
right? Or Congress,
yeah,
you know, something awesome
that'd
and sexy,
cool. Like a Congress garden.
Exactly.
Where everyone has to get together and vote and agree on what meal will be served, and it'll be served to everybody, but then you can also work in your own sort of little pork barrel projects on the side in
but
committee.
It has to be sort of sexy and mysterious, so maybe you take the whole powdered wig thing from the colonial era.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
And, well, you know, you start with that, and then, you know, just create sort of an outfit that's very loosely based on that whole mm-hmm. look. But, you know, kind of mysterious and maybe tiki-like.
Sure. How about, like, something like the Spanish Inquisition Cafe?
That's a goodie.
It's not modern per se, but I would enjoy seeing somebody try to mount the challenge of trying to make that into some kind of family dining entertainment.
Well, I think it could be done. The challenge is to make it into that sort of playground, you know, hey, you know, sorry, but, you know, the Spanish Inquisition said I had to sleep with your wife, you know, kind of place.
Gotcha.
As opposed to, you know, medieval times where they, well, I think that's a good example. I don't think medieval times were that fun, in fact, mm-hmm. for your average person.
Right.
Even the kings were getting picked off left and right.
Certainly, no matter how fun it was or wasn't, there were no free soda refills. In the right. actual medieval times.
And I seriously doubt that every serf had, you know, a turkey leg on which to feast. A
little paper crown.
Yeah, well, they did have the paper crowns. That's documented.
Well, no, just not for the little ones.
Oh, that's true. But if you've seen the Tudors, you know all about the paper crowns.
That's true.
Okay, I think that ran its course.
Okay, so we digress back into the timeline. So we did Dallas, and that was fine. And then we went to California, and that's when all hell broke loose.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. Thursday, we had a show at the Belly Up Tavern in San Diego, which was a bit more of a bar-ish type place. I mean, it was definitely still a music venue, but put it this way, the crowd was much more drunk than the usual Jonathan Colton, Paul, and Storm crowd was.
Well, I think there were two things happening there.
Uh-huh.
Like, there was the hardcore Colton crowd, which is typically not a big drinking crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably more alcoholics just because it's a beautiful place in the world to drink.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you also had people there that were sort of local or just would come to the venue if something sounded interesting to them.
Yep.
Like the spinning hippie dancing guy.
Yep,
you know,
yep. There was one dude. He was a veritable whirling dervish for much of Jonathan's set. Just like standing in the middle of the floor, near the back, and spinning his little heart out.
And he may have been a Linux programmer who was just out for a good time, but I think it more likely that, you know,
he was local color.
Yeah, that he may have followed the dead for a while and said, "Screw it, I'm settling down in Solana Beach."
Right.
And came back out for the big show.
Because he heard something about monkeys.
But it was a fun place.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely, you know, I don't say it was necessarily even worse for being wilder, drunker crowd, but it was certainly different and unexpected.
Great energy.
So there was that. Then on Friday, we recorded, as has been mentioned on the Twitters, we recorded a Riff Tracks with Jonathan Colton, which, those of you who don't know what that is, if you've ever seen Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's like that several of the folks from that have gone on to do this thing. And if you are not familiar with that, basically they record new audio, or audio commentary, if you will, over existing popular movies with many sarcastic comments and little quips. And what, boy, I'm really doing a great job selling this, aren't I?
No, I would buy it.
Well, chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you know what it is. But anyway, Riff Tracks, RIFFTRAX.com.
If I can
we recorded a riff for the movie Tron, which, for those of you who've been asking, is scheduled to come out on Tuesday, the 26th of May, is the word that we have been told. So keep an eye out for that. That was an odd and surreal experience. As I told them, this is Mike Nelson and Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy are the guys from Mystery Science Theater who do this on a regular basis. And they were kind enough to ask us pretty much a year ago, I think, if we'd be interested in doing this. And it took us this long to sort of work out all the schedules and timing and such. But as I said to them when we were finished recording, it was, you know, this oddly surreal thing because 18 years ago or so, when I was in grad school, I first started watching Mystery Science Theater. And beyond the sort of general, gee, that's cool, wouldn't that be an awesome way to make a living fantasizing that one does and that everyone does, I think, I had more highly specific fantasies trying to figure out how could I possibly finagle it that I could go work with these guys, you know, who at the time were located in Minneapolis, and spent way too much brain power for way too long a time trying to figure out how to make that happen. Never actively pursued it in any way whatsoever.
No. I saw that treatment you had for Diesel P. Paul Bott.
Yeah, that sort of went nowhere. I didn't even have the guts to send it to him. I had the stamp on the envelope, but I couldn't put it in the box.
Yeah.
But that was a really interesting, fun, and kind of stressful experience. It's hard doing that.
Yeah, and now I don't want to spoil the mystery of it, but...
No, spoil away. That's what people listen for.
Okay, it's totally scripted. I mean, we did some improvising as we went along, but
not much.
And we were invited to help do the scripting process, but
as
when
are all
you
the
sit
guests.
Down to do it, it's like, oh my God, like there is a funny comment like every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Not like on an egg timer or anything, but consistently.
Yep.
And our hats are off to them because they do, you know, dozens, scores of these. Mm-hmm. And then sitting down, you have, they play the movie and there's a time code on it. And then you have a script and it marks the time code on there. And you sort of get a rhythm to it where you kind of scan the script for the time, see what's happening on the movie. And then the challenge is to make it sound like, hey, I just came up with this awesome, funny thing.
Yep.
And some of them are dialogues among all three of us, riffing on stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a great time, and I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well. So keep an ear out for that. God knows we will be posting links out the wazoo to it when it does come out on our website. So there was the riff tracks, and that ended our time in San Diego.
Yeah.
Then we traveled up the 5 to the 405, to Los Angeles, and every time we go to Los Angeles,
by the way,
what's that?
Good job on the highway lingo, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, it is. It, as they say on the left coast, it's the 5 and the 405. That instead of saying, excuse me, what it should be called, I-5 and I-405.
Well, that's funny because on this season's 24, the show,
yeah,
it was in DC, and they sort of did the reverse screw up thing.
Oh, right.
They would call, you know, like Interstate 95, the 95, you know.
Dummies. Dummies. Do some research, guys.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress.
So we traveled up the highway to Los Angeles. And as I was saying, every time we go into Los Angeles, just strange things happen. Not strange bad or strange good necessarily, but certainly strange. Let me think. What happened first? I want to get the order right. Well, you know, we check in and we are staying, you know, thanks to Priceline, we were staying at this schmancy Century City, West Hollywood, as we dubbed it, douchebag hotel.
Yep.
It's sort of like, you know, it wasn't the Beverly Hills Hotel necessarily, but it might as well have been, with the, you know, outdoor lounges with couches and tented cabanas by the pool. And every couch in the lounge had nattily dressed, perfectly coiffed, skinny, high-powered, coked-up dudes having way too loud conversations on their Bluetooth headsets.
A lot of money was swimming around in that entire hotel.
Yeah, and it was just sort of, it was strange, and we're not used to it.
In this weird part of town.
Alluring and neat in its own way.
It's Century City, which if you're not from L.A. or haven't been there, it's sort of like this planned community for money kind of slapped down in the middle of town.
Yeah.
Where you have these boring office towers sort of jut up, and it's not far from Wilshire Boulevard and all of that stuff, but sort of this kind of lifeless, weird.
Yeah, there's just
place.
There was no soul there, and it's got one of those weirdo outdoor California malls, which always just I don't know why they weird me out in particular, but they do because like when I'm in a mall, I want a roof over my head,
right?
And
it's
I
laid
want
out
air
like
conditioning
a regular
blasting
mall.
At me at all times.
Yeah. Well, but when it doesn't rain much, I guess you know why.
Yeah,
bother
yeah,
with the
exactly.
Roof?
I understand that. Nonetheless, so we had the weird, unsettling hotel experience, and then where shall we go from there? Should we just go straight to the show?
Yeah, let's do that. I don't want to get bogged down in the how awesome.
Yeah, we met up with various friends, had various dinners and lunches and hangouts, people we knew from back in the day and such. And then we went to the show at Largo, which is a very storied comedy theater. in Hollywood.
Like you were saying, the alt comedy movement really was launched from that cradle.
Yeah, as I said, it is certainly the spiritual home of alternative comedy. And actually, the one thing I will say is we went to go see John Bryan perform on Friday night at Largo.
Oh man, yeah.
And if you have never heard of this man, I'd heard of him, but I have to admit I was not familiar with pretty much any of his music other than knowing that he had written the music for the Punch Drunk Love soundtrack, and he'd done production for Amy Mann and such. But it was really just sort of a passing acquaintance. I couldn't have named any of his songs for you.
Yeah.
The word musical genius is batted around quite a bit, and rarely is it more deserved than for somebody like John Bryan.
Basically, he is... I would almost say virtuoso.
He's a savant
on piano and on guitars, and he played
both acoustic and electric.
And he does things where he creates these arrangements on the fly using looping technology, where he'll go back to the drums, lay that down, then
lay down an entire verse and or chorus,
which isn't anything we haven't seen before. But
yeah, well, not to that length necessarily.
Right, and the way that he did it, it didn't seem gimmicky. Like, yep. When he was setting up the drums, it just sounded like, hey, that's a cool beat, and mm-hmm. he built it, and that once he'd built this background, that everything hit well, and it was tight, and when he began singing on top of it, you really felt like it was a real rock experience. Not that he only did rock, but...
But suffice to say,
impressive.
If you live anywhere within the greater Los Angeles area and you have not yet gone to see John Bryan perform, he performs pretty much every Friday night at Largo, and it is just an awesome show.
And he solicits.
If we lived there, we'd probably go every week.
And he solicits requests from the audience. So
yes, for yes. That, so that is never the same show twice, from what we are told.
Speaking of audience requests, do you want to put that off a little bit?
Let's put that off.
Okay, let's
finish up this little chronology, because there's much more weirdness and coolness and awesomeness to be had, which I'm still trying to process, which is partly why I'm being such a dick. And also, you know why I'm being such a dick tonight? I figured it out, because I changed things up, and I am podcasting with my feet up on the desk right now.
See, that's not a dickish thing to do.
No, but somehow I think it has thrown off my chi.
Yeah.
But I'm it's just something I'm trying to be a little more comfortable. And instead of being more comfortable, I'm being whatever the hell it is I'm being tonight.
As long as it's interesting, that's what counts.
Yes.
And being a dick is interesting.
That's true. There's no arguing that. So, Sunday night show, Largo. Great many, pretty much half of the internet was in the audience. Many by our invitation. Many just happened to be there. Felicia Day and Sandeep Parikh from The Guild, those of you who know them. Kim Evey from Gorgeous Tiny Chicken Machine Show and her husband were there.
Will Wheaton
and blogger extraordinaire and pretty much geek spokesman at this point.
Which
was
he
in the
exercised
house.
In his full capacity.
Yes, that's right. Our first Secretary of Geek Affairs, as elected by you, our fans.
Yeah, he came out and introduced the entire show by bestowing the 20-sided die. Was it of freedom?
I believe.
Of awesomeness upon Jonathan Colton.
Yes. And then on top of everything else, Weird Al Yankovic attended the show.
Yeah.
Much to our delight and consternation, because he's certainly one of the reasons I do what I do for a living.
Yeah,
both as an inspiration and as showing, you know, that it is practically possible to earn a living doing, you know, novelty music, for lack of a better term, and to be a professional musician for 30 years and still be an incredibly nice and well-liked guy. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I was pausing to let you take over there because I had run out of an idea.
Oh, okay. Wasn't,
or were you just soaking in the image of Weird Al and his wonderfulness?
Well, he is. Because, no, seriously, like, everything that you say is true about that, in that I wouldn't say that, you know, we've tried to copy what Weird Al has done.
No.
In fact... a long time ago, I think we consciously decided, you know, as far as parody songs goes, you know, that's his bag and he does it so well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, why, you know, try and compete?
Right. And
even if
but
we want
beyond
to.
That, you know, a lot of people do try doing parody, and it doesn't stick. And he just has a personality that engages with the music. And I think that more than anything is what we've always tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, it's about delivering it in a way that's appealing. And it was just, I don't know, I freaked out a little bit, I will
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I was a little weirded out. Like, I don't really get stage fright anymore
yeah.
during our shows because we've done these hundreds of times at this point. I wouldn't say I was frightened. I had a little anxiousness going on there, though. Just sort of
yeah.
knowing all these folks were out there and wanting to do well.
Well, it's funny. Like, I get the sort of the bad nervousness maybe an hour before, but
mm-hmm.
as showtime approaches, it smelts down into this awesome energy. And the challenge becomes to not, like, to control the energy and to
yep.
keep it from
yep.
making you play the guitar at, you know, twice speed or
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
just start speaking gibberish, you know. But, no, I felt like it was a real strong effort.
Yeah.
In part. And the crowd in general was just
yeah, the
up.
Crowd was phenomenal. And to top everything off, roughly 5 minutes into our set, there was a 4.7 earthquake 15 or 20 miles away that I didn't even feel.
No.
And apparently some people in the audience felt it. And I was a little disappointed, frankly. You know, having experienced my first California earthquake, I wanted to sort of, you know, rattle around a bit. Not, you know, I didn't want any glass falling on my head or anything, but...
Nuts.
I didn't even, like, feel something and then think back and realize, oh, that was the earthquake. I felt nothing. I was
now,
too amped up, I guess.
Yeah, every time we come to L.A., I'd say, and it's San Francisco, I hate myself for it, but that's always one of my first thoughts is,
mm-hmm.
wow, is there going to be an earthquake? That'd
I am
awesome.
The same exact way.
Like when
and
we
I always
go to
just
Iowa.
Hope it's not when I'm going over a bridge or on an overpass or something.
Well, that's when you think of it the most. You
and
know.
I especially don't want it to be when I'm riding my motorcycle through the custom loop-de-loop that my buddy has built for me, just like in the 1974 film Earthquake.
Much as like when we go to Iowa or Indiana and we're traveling across the flat distances that you can just imagine a funnel cloud coming down.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You don't want anyone to get hurt, least
nope.
of all yourself. But yeah, I think we were just rocking too hard.
That was the problem. Some people have accused it of just the convergence of geekery at Largo somehow threw off the tectonic plates, but I prefer to think that it was the majesty and power of our rocking.
Now, jumping back to Poochie Corner,
yes.
There was someone else in the audience that if I had really remembered was there, it might have pushed me over the edge into
mm-hmm.
like going into to brain lock. But it's a fellow named Bob Lefsetz, and he does something called the Lefsetz Letter, which
just a little background. He's a, because I looked it up, I got the wiki right here in front of me. He's a, used to be a, an entertainment attorney and a consultant to major record labels.
And now he's very much an evangelist for like the new music and media reality.
Yes.
He kind of has predicted, he's almost an oracle in seeing that the current, well, the devolving music business model is just not working. And stuff
yep.
like Jonathan Colton is doing, where you're going directly to your audience, which we have picked up, and Creative Commons, where you can tell people, hey, it's cool to, you know, to share our music. And by the way, it's cool to share our music.
Yes, it is.
And every day he posts, he sends out this email letter and also posts it on his website. And he was at the show and did his letter entirely on the show about both Jonathan and us and what it represents,
mm-hmm.
About going directly to your fans. And that at one point he says, you know, is Jonathan Colton going to be the next breakout star? No, he's not. But you don't have to be.
Yeah.
You know, you find your audience. But it's I will say it's a couple of things he said directly about us, well, that qualified for Poochie Corner.
Right.
But
yes,
that
yes.
that really put a smile on our faces.
Yeah, you can Google search Left Setz Letter. That's S-E-T-Z. And you can find that, and we'll link to it on our website because it's really fucking cool.
Ten minute mark.
Yes. Oh, it was 20 minutes ago.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
This might be a 45 minuter.
Could be. Well, you know, it was a hell of a week. It's a unique, unique podcast for a unique week. Oh, hold on. I have to make sure my screen just went dark because my screensaver kicked in. Just wanted to make sure I was still recording, and I am. So that was us. That was a long, long Poochie Corner. We had a hell of a time. Thank you, Dallas and West Coast, and Bob Lefsetz, and all the cool, awesome internet people we got to meet who, to a person, I can't say to a man because several of them were ladies, were all very nice and sweet and just as cool as you could imagine and want them to be.
Is it a... Yeah, it's cool. I want to call out something really cool that some of our fans did.
Oh, please do.
There is a fan, Jade, who is also a Colton fan, of course, and is an upright minion of the highest standing.
Yes.
She, in conjunction with Colleen, I believe, actually created a sash. And we give out minion awards for participating in campaigns or for just doing something that we think is kind of entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And they made up these, like, Girl Scout, Boy Scout, like, little badges that went on this sash for each of the campaigns.
Yeah, sort of graphic representations of the various awards they had received.
So, just big props for that. That kind
of... Yeah, that was really cool.
That kind of thing should
be
recognized.
Like rock stars.
Yep.
Like award-giving rock stars.
Okay.
Yes, you had mentioned or at least alluded to before, I believe, how we solicited on the Twitters for what we should talk about for this podcast.
And this is an experiment.
Yeah, so. It is. We're going to see how this goes. There's quite a many responses here.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever done this before. Like, if this works out, you know, it's a thing. And if it doesn't, we're never doing it again. So
if it doesn't work out, it's totally not a thing.
Yep.
I've just hit refresh, and now I'm going back down, reverse chronologically to the beginning of what people have been suggesting. Pick along and speak or not speak to some of the various ideas people have suggested.
I'm going to note a number of people have suggested that we talk about them. Not going to happen. Food,
nope,
of course,
no
we'll
way.
Talk about food. We may have already. We've already talked about the Rift Tracks thing.
Yeah. Let's see. We will not talk about any reality shows. Good for you to ask us not to do that.
Ooh, Jesse Ventura's hair.
He's got sort of a Ben Franklin thing going on. He's been hitting the major media outlets in the last week or so. But beyond that, I don't find it particularly fascinating, other than he's no longer bald.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, that's interesting. I guess between Tom Hanks and Jesse Ventura, it's been a good week for talking about hair.
The Rift Tracks thing we talked about.
Our writing process, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, sure. Dick jokes, sure, all the time.
Oh, here we go. This was Scotty. Scotty.
Yes, hey, Scotty Moe. Shout out.
The guy, yep, and he was actually part of one of my topics here. He suggested talking about the cookies that he brought us for the interview.
Yes, Scotty is some sort of media broadcasting major, and
he's
asked
a budding
to interview
broadcaster
us for one of his final projects for a course,
and brought along some delicious cookies that were from the Paradise Bakery cookies. He did not pay us for that; they just
nope,
happened to be very good.
Entirely unsolicited praise for these cookies.
The topic I had was actually, it seems like. A large number... Well, let me back up. The topic name was the Velvet Podground.
Okay.
Which alludes to the Velvet Underground. And it was said of them that they only had, you know, 2,000 fans. But each of those fans went on to form a band.
Right.
That it was like, you know, sort of the Genesis group. And it seems like a lot of our listeners are podcasters also. And at least a number of the people that come up to us after the shows, a startling number seem to also be podcasters.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, you know, why?
I think it's just because everybody has a podcast anymore.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So anyway, let's
oh, here's one. Briefly, asking about the soundtrack to Best Concert Ever that we're releasing. That would be, of course, Jonathan Coulton's brand new DVD. This question has been asked a couple of times, probably by the same person. In fact, footage of our opening set at Jonathan's concert that he recorded does exist. The problem is it's all sitting on a hard drive somewhere, and we haven't been able to get access to it until Jonathan's project was done. And then those of you who are fans of his realize that it took, you know, almost a year and a half to get his DVD together, and that's when he was paying people large sums of money to help him edit it together. So I don't know if that's ever, you know, on top of the fact that they basically used our set to test out all the cameras and work out all the glitches. So we have no idea if there's even usable footage there.
Yeah.
But that being said, a live CD and or DVD is something we have discussed with increasing fervor at Team Poland Storm, and is something that is definitely on our radar. We don't know exactly when or how. But it is absolutely something that we would like to make happen at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Well, it continues to be one of our most enduring challenges,
yeah,
which is to capture our live show in a format that is saleable and, you know, just makes us superstars. That's kind of the challenge right there. So maybe that's our audience participation is... How do we make ourselves superstars?
Yes, which is a topic for its own whole podcast. Here's one about Eurovision. I have not watched any Eurovision yet this year. I'm waiting for somebody to edit together all the highlights. But I do look forward to Eurovision every year. If you don't know what that is, run a Google search. You won't be sorry. Scrolling through. Poop, yeah. We usually do well with poop jokes. But
I think
we're sort of chock full, seeing as we're at almost the 37-minute mark or some such.
I'm going to declare that a successful experiment.
Yeah, I think that worked. I think we can try this again next time around when we're not, you know, filling up the first 30 minutes of the podcast talking about our own damn selves.
Yeah. Well, I think it was worthwhile. It wasn't.
Oh yeah,
like
it was
we
warranted.
Just describing. Well, first we went to Detroit, so I think it was. Entertaining.
But so there we go. That being said, let's get to the closing business. This week, Thursday, the 21st of May, we are going to be at the Jukebox Comedy Club in Peoria, Illinois, with Dan St. Paul. And then Saturday, the 23rd, we are at the... it's still not on my thing. Here, make some random noise for 20 seconds, Storm.
Oh, well I'll just go ahead and read the other topic title I had.
Sure.
Which was Paul called Felicia Day a bitch.
It's funny because it's true, but there's a story behind it.
Yeah, it's not as cut and dried as that.
Maybe maybe we'll talk about that next week, or maybe we'll pretend it didn't happen.
We'll just let that stew for a week.
I'm losing friends now. The Orpheum Theater on Saturday, the 23rd of May, also with Dan St. Paul. Then the 30th of May, we are at the Variety Playhouse in Atlanta with Jonathan Coulton. And then coming up in June 13th, we're at the Edwards Opera House in Edwards, New York. And then on the 19th and 20th of June, we are at Chadwick's, the Rogue Regency Inn in Medford, Oregon. And that's the upcoming schedule.
Okay, go to paulandstorm.com for more information or to join the Brigade of Minions. Until then, I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Boy, this was long.
Go do things.